This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today in studio we have three guests. We have Ted Becker. Ted is the owner and broker for RE/MAX Results in Moreno Valley, which he started in 1989. Ted has vast experience in real estate. He's been able to train and lead 35 of Southern California's highest producing real estate brokers and agents. Before opening RE/MAX Results, Ted practiced law with Miller Hodges and Bemis LLC in Newport Beach. Mike Novak-Smith is one of the nation's largest REO agents and has managed and sold 1,000 homes for corporate sellers. Mike specializes in default service side of the business, which focuses on REO short sale and valuation products. Shelly Linda Kugel. Shelly's a certified real estate broker manager with a diverse background in the real estate industry, which began in 1989. In 2012, Shelly stepped down from management to pursue real estate sales once more. She and her partners have consistently been named a top-performing team, closing approximately $15 million annually. Well, welcome to our show. What's interesting, because I pay attention to dates, 1989 was like a wonderful year and then so quickly turned lousy for the next six. And California hadn't experienced anything like that, actually. So how did that change what you did? Ted, I'll give it to you first. You know, because 1989 was the peak of a market, and then quickly thereafter it changed.
Well, to be honest, Bruce, I came out of commercial real estate, so I probably didn't even know it was bad. I knew commercial was bad.
Right, but that had taken bad.
So we sort of grew up in a very, very tough time. That's probably why we're still here. I didn't know it was too hard, or I didn't know it was going to be that hard, so I just did what I did.
Okay.
To be honest.
Okay. How's business in general? I'll give that to Mike. I mean, as far as now, if you're concentrating on, it seems like short sales are disappearing, REO sales non-existent. So how does that affect what you do? I mean, it has to change your product, I would think.
Well, it seems like we're working very hard, not making a lot of money at some of it. I have a lot of REOs, but a lot of them are going to become rentals. That's become the new REO formula.
For the lender.
They want to, you know, we're managing them, but they're going to become a lot of them rental properties.
Wow. But there's not a lot of foreclosures. If I look at a foreclosure chart, but the damage coming from the REO side of the business is not occurring.
No.
They're just keeping them.
Yeah, they're keeping more and more of them. Yeah.
Okay. As far as business now, Shelly, do you deal with the consumer that buys the homes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how is business on that side of the world?
We're super, super busy right now. And we have been busy since, well, we've been super busy for a long time, but this first quarter of this year has been crazy. We're dealing with an awful lot of move-up buyers.
Okay.
It's the main part of our business right now.
Okay.
And I think that's been depressed for a while, has it not? The move-up buyer.
I don't know if it's been depressed or if it's just really coming around now. I'm not sure, but
well, they've got
just
a,
everybody.
They bring a pretty good pile of equity to the transaction, I would think.
Yeah, everybody's got equity. Well, for the most part, everyone's got equity. They're buying and they're moving up. Some are moving out of state.
Okay, well, that's interesting. What percentage do you think are making that decision? Because that's a big deal.
I would bet 30% of our sellers are moving out of state.
30%?
25 to 30%, yep. A lot of relocating is a lot of older people
deal.
Are moving out because they just can't
unusual.
Afford to live here
yeah.
anymore in retirement.
That's unusual because if you look at normal statistics, a very high percentage of seniors usually retire right where they are. But if financially it makes no sense to do that, then you could see that relocation happening because you can go to Florida. I mean, just some of the numbers there. There was somebody that had bought a home and flipped it, but the person they bought it from in Orange County paid $100,000 for it 30 years before, had never done anything to it, it was all original, sold it for $1 million. And, you know, they basically didn't have any dough. Now all of a sudden they can buy a home for $250 in Florida, which is wonderful, and have $750 to retire on. It changed their whole life.
I see a lot of people moving to Utah, Northern Nevada. Arizona to a point.
Okay.
New Mexico.
Which is, you know, because following statistics, this is all repetitive. So whenever California does really well, first thing happens is money migrates to those areas as investors, and then people. So that's true. Texas gets some. You know, Florida's a recipient from other states on the East Coast. So that's pretty repetitive stuff. What's your sense on the ease of getting loans, getting a yes from a lender?
Hard.
Okay. Is there any programs that, let's say I don't really have a job for very long, or I don't have a bunch of cash for down payment. That's not easy, right?
No, but it doesn't. There are some of those home buyer assistance programs out there. There's a lot of them, but sellers won't accept them because, you know, we're getting multiple offers on everything.
Right.
And so if you're a seller, why would you accept a loan with a home buyer assistance program when you can just take a conventional offer?
Correct.
Yeah, the government loans are still there, but they're very difficult to qualify for. You know, there's a lot of paperwork involved.
Yeah, I mean, every time I'm in a transaction, we're all holding our breath till the end because you're just like, right. What else could they possibly ask for? And how many times can they ask to say they're the same thing they've lost, too?
I think the lenders have just, you know, you have to qualify. All the guidelines have to be met, but the guys that know what they're doing know how to work the system, and they have their systems down, and they get them done. It's not easy, but I think a lot of the deals, potential deals, they blow them out going in. The fallout rate for me, what I've seen the last couple of years, hasn't been as bad.
Right, because they just don't start it with somebody right. They're not going to make it.
Yeah, right. They do quality assurance going in, really.
Okay. Yeah. Do you see anything that would tell you that's going to change radically in the next couple of years, that's going to get lots easier?
I think it's getting easier. I think that lenders are relaxing their guidelines to a point. I mean, there are lenders that can do under 600 FICO score loans, 580.
FHA. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Well, they've always been able to do that. They just decided not to.
They decided right? not
they
to, but now they're doing them again.
They have overlays that say, we're not going to do that.
Right. But now they're doing them again.
FHA would do that.
Yeah.
Okay. It used to represent closing in on 45% of FHA's business, that FICO score or less. Now it's 5%.
Yeah, well.
That's a very big difference in who you let into the system. What's the urgency to buy? So thinking back to 2004 and 5, I built a home, a tract of homes in Rosamond, which is 9 miles outside of Lancaster and an awfully long way from L.A. 90% of our buyers bought homes in Rosamond and drove to L.A. for work. That's how desperately they wanted to get their name on a grant deed. So that's urgency to me. What is the sense of urgency to, God, I've got to buy right now?
I mean, it's just all different kinds of motivations. I think people are worried about the interest rate going up, and so they want to buy now before it gets higher. I think I'm seeing a lot of millennials now buying, and that was depressed for a while. They were waiting a lot longer to buy. I've got a new client that's never owned a house. They're in their late 50s. They've never owned a house. They've rented their entire life in Huntington Beach. And now we're looking for a house for them in Lake Elsinore or Menifee. So I think just all different kinds of reasons and motivations, maybe.
Okay.
Prices. Want to get in there before prices go up more.
I was going to say, it's a little late for that
one.
But, you know, we're hearing, at least the news is telling us that Dodd-Frank is being softened and enlightened. And so that might lead buyers to want to get in.
Okay. In the 90s, you did an unusual transaction that very few broke. Matter of fact, I wrote a seminar and talk about subject to deals. And one of the things it says is don't bother doing this with a broker. Because it's a waste of time until I met you. So that's an interesting, that was a niche that you had. So can you describe what a subject to transaction is and how often you did it in the 90s?
Well, during the years, and I have to tell you, I'm not sure exactly what years they were, but in the late 90s, maybe early 90s, we did a lot of what I then called land contracts.
Okay.
All an all-inclusive trust deed, a land contract, or a, quote, subject to transaction are all essentially the same thing. It's, I walk in as a buyer and say, Mr. Seller, walk away. I will take over your payments. Maybe I give you something for that. Excuse me. And you walk away. I take over your payments. You trust me to make the payments. I trust you to basically get out of town, if nothing else. And we all go up on our merry way. There are risks involved. We did probably in those 3 or 4 years, we probably did about 1,000 to 1,200 subject to transactions.
Which is inconceivable, honestly, to me. Because I mean,
it's all we could do.
If you talk to a broker, to do one is a miracle because they just don't get it and but they don't want to stand in the way of it.
The key is, very simply, and I think I was, you could say I was naive or you could say I was really smart. Your choice. I said, look, here are the risks on each side. If we sit each client down, buyer and seller, sit them down together, and we say, Mr. Buyer, these are your risks. Mr. Seller, these are your risks. Do you understand them? And we are all looking each other in the eye. I said, most people are not going to come back, at least not at us. Now, a lender might come at us for interference with contract or something like that.
Right.
But I think what you had was a lot of brokers who didn't have any legal training, were afraid of the idea, had been taught that these were illegal. And so for us, it was great.
They're basically against lender policy, not illegal, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, the in my view, the contract between the borrower and the lender is a contract. And there are terms in that contract. And if one party breaches one of those terms, you haven't violated a law.
No.
You have breached a contract.
Right. And that gives the lender
certain
rights.
And the other party has certain rights to react to that. That's what we're talking about.
Okay. Now, but the two ways you did it, or there were three ways, but one, land contract, the transfer doesn't occur to title. Where if I do a wrap, it does.
Correct.
Did you have one more preferential than the other?
At that time, I was still afraid of the notification to the lender.
Okay.
So I preferred a land contract wherein the grant deed was recorded 3 or 5 or some years down the road. An AITD, to my mind, gave more notice to a lender, potential notice to a lender.
To the person that borrowed the money. Or to the original lender.
Yeah, the original lender.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Well, there is a profit center. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you if this is prevalent right now. Because the interest rates that you're talking about in the 90s probably were 10% on the existing paper. And I don't know if the market was a lot less, but I think it might have been. You know, if you were going to borrow a loan, that was after the recession. It was probably 7 or 8%, and you had a 10% existing paper. That's a tougher sell than today. Today, you have existing paper at 3 or 4.
Today, the opposite situation.
That's right. You have bargain paper in place.
You know, I can't relate the cultural action at the time, but what I recall is we had a lot of buyers who couldn't qualify or didn't have a down payment, but could pay.
Right, but that, I mean, now you have a whole bunch of buyers who can't get a yes answer from a lender who can pay.
Same problem. The buyer can't buy the house.
That's right.
Unless we do something creative.
Have these become popular again?
I don't think I've heard of them until today, driving over here with Shelley.
I had a buyer in my car the other day who said, do you think they would let us take their loan subject to? And I said,
what?
No, I don't, because they've got the house on the market and they've got a lot of equity and not quite sure why they would do that. So
what about somebody in foreclosure? I mean, for instance, that whole group of people that is maybe like a pending trustee sale, why would they say no to that? Isn't that something that would make sense to them?
Well, I think a lot of them would say yes. I believe the subject to idea works best when the seller is either slightly upside down or at a break-even point.
Yeah, that's right. Not even behind.
There's just a fine line where they work. And then, it would just – that's the last couple of them I did, that's what happened. My client was like at a break-even point, and then we did the subject to relatives, and it worked fine. The lenders do not care about it. I did some checking last week. For them to foreclose in California today, the minimum is about $35,000. So if they're getting the payments every month, they're going to not worry about it.
$35,000 to foreclose, yes. Because they're giving people money?
Well, because you have to follow so many laws and procedures, and the attorneys have to do it. It's not, you know, 15 years ago, you called First American Title, it was $3,500.
Right.
Now it's many thousands. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
They do not want to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they're getting paid, it was difficult to me to understand what was the motivation here. You're a lender, not a wannabe property owner. Can you leave it alone? But common sense sometimes isn't in play there. I did a purchase one time, subject to, fixed the house, made the payments up. And then I got a notice in the mail I was getting foreclosed on because my name wasn't on the loan. It was the first experience of that. Mm-hmm. So I called up, and the lady read me basically the Riot Act saying, well, it's our right to do that. I said, but does it make any sense to do it? So I finally got to the president of the bank, explained to him the situation. He says, well, that makes no sense, does it? That was Hemet Federal, and he pulled the foreclosure and let me live happily ever after. But I had to get to a decision maker for somebody not to throw the rule book at me and say, we can do this. Well, yeah, you can, but why would you? That's common sense sometimes is missing in the plan.
Well, the average foreclosure in California now is just, I do my own checking. I ask people, what was your story? Why'd you lose this house? It's about 2.5 to 3 years. I talk to people constantly. So that's 2 or 3 years of feeding the house,
yeah,
of paying attorneys, and a monumental hassle factor for what if a guy was current? They wouldn't care.
And the process is set up to be 3 months and 21 days.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently it's not working too good.
Well, in the late 90s, Fannie Mae used to brag about how they were foreclosing quickly.
That's right.
And it was a law. After six months, you had to do it.
That's right. I remember that law because it was a dip in foreclosures. You know me in charts. So in 95, there was a dip. And that was when the law was enacted. They said, no, you can't leave these people in here. You have to foreclose. And so they kicked it in. And then all of a sudden, now we have this round. I was going to ask you, you know, this to me is what's not going to happen this next round. I don't think we're going to have this big rash of foreclosures. Okay, you're of agreement with that?
Well, one thing I've seen on about the last 10 REOs that I've obtained, 8 of them were deed and lose. Deed and lose becoming popular with the banks because I was talking to an asset manager about it. He says, look, we give them 10 grand. We pay 5 grand in attorney fees. We're rid of them. We're done.
So they're not just getting it. In other words, the seller isn't just recording it saying you're stuck with it. They're saying we'll participate in it.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not something
we
like.
We want another rental.
No, it's all for real. The main thing is they save eviction costs. They save, you know,
sure,
several, you know, how many years of no payments, the whole bit.
Well, and when you're in a home and you don't care anymore, that shows up in repair bills. Mm. So in flipping 80 houses in Florida who had a 4-year foreclosure process, that was one of the surprises for us. We bought and sold many hundreds of homes and have a pretty good idea if we're looking at a home built in 89 and it's 2,000 square feet, Gray can get within 1% of repairs. Okay, not in Florida. Mm. That was a new story because these people hadn't cared for 4 years and there were some surprises there. We just went, wow. It was pretty repetitive stuff. So, yeah, you could see where the lenders would get more aggressive saying. So
yeah, exactly.
It's interesting. Of course, I wouldn't know that. But to me, the loan programs that have been in place for the last 8 years are so conservative. And the one thing we haven't done either is we haven't extracted equity this time. Usually when we have booms in the 80s, we took equity out. And we took tons of equity out in 2000 to 2005. In the last 8 years, we haven't touched one dime of equity collectively as a country. We've paid it back.
Maybe people are learning from their lessons.
Yes. I mean, can you believe that? But it's
no.
True. So think about that price chart in California. Literally, it's doubled in the last 8 years, and we haven't touched a dime of equity collectively. So all those gains are still in place. That move-up market, they're selling and getting a big check and putting that down. So it's hard to imagine a foreclosure scenario where you have these loans that have been qualified for and the equity hasn't been touched. You'd have a sale that would not result in an REO. you'd have such a equity spread.
But aren't the foreclosures that you're talking about from 3 or 4 years back, right? Mm-hmm. Not from today.
Well, but see,
you really stopped making payments 3 years ago.
But it's gone up so much, it's a moot point. I mean, honestly, we had a guy come to the office one time. He had never made a payment on a VA loan. He had never made a payment. This was about 2000 he got a loan. In 2004, he's in my office. Mm-hmm. And but you know what? He had 200 grand of equity. Can you believe that? He never had made a payment.
Isn't California wonderful?
Yeah. And he says, well, what do you think? I said, the only thing I can say is congratulations. I said, it's the only thing I've ever seen where you've never made a payment. You're going to walk away with money. I mean, that's just crazy. Well, I mean, the 90s, we had a fair amount of foreclosures, but then it got dwarfed in 2008 and 9 and so forth. So that's why they changed the policy. So another reason why I think we might not have this pile of foreclosures is the willingness of the lender to bend over backwards not to get one.
Hmm. Well, yeah, short sales, when it goes bad again, of course it will, short sales will be big, and the deed and lose. I talk to a lot of foreclosure attorneys when I go to REO events, and basically they will all tell you, you know, from the attorney type states, they will do anything to, the lenders will do anything to avoid a foreclosure, to have to deal with the process. However they can get away from that, they will do it. About anything they can.
Maybe they'll allow assumptions or subject tos.
Yeah. I mean, that when we went into Washington, D.C., we got invited to speak there to Fannie Mae and FHA. That was one of the meetings we had was with the FHA guy. And we're sitting across. I said, how about you just let us take subject to? Because Texas, for instance, wouldn't have had a foreclosure problem. You can rent the house for $1,500. The payment's $1,000. And you're foreclosing on the houses. It makes no sense. Just let them take them over. He said, I have no problem with that. I said, would you put that in writing for me? He says, no, I can't do that. He understood it, but he couldn't sell it. You know, that's in the policymaking world, that's the problem.
Well, that's where the subject to transaction sort of fits into the whole. It's another tool in the toolbox, another opportunity for certain people to take advantage of certain things. That's really what it boils down to.
In the 90s, we had tons of people with no equity or negative equity, and that was an exit. And that's the problem here is we don't have the negative equity, and there's no reason to do it right now.
Interest rates.
Well, interest rates, if you had no equity and interest rates at 4%, you still might be interested in doing it, no?
No, I think interest rates might be the driver.
Maybe
not today. Okay. If I have a loan on my house at 3 5/8 or 3 3/4, and today we're at 4.5, probably, right? And
yeah.
Next month or two or three, we might be at 5. All of a sudden, 3 3/4 starts looking pretty attractive. If I don't have to come up with $25,000 to bring the loan current and so forth,
right.
That's a pretty attractive rate. And if I'm looking as an investor, 2 points of interest rate might make the decision for me.
Well, when you have a buyer on that side, do you have to have a 5% mortgage rate or could you have a 7.5% mortgage rate? I mean, could you make a spread of 4% and still have a buyer today?
Sure.
See, I think you probably could.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If they didn't have to do a normal qualifying, what would be the reaction? What would be the reaction if you ran an ad that said no qualifying for a house for sale in Riverside?
They have 125 offers tomorrow. The question is, why does a seller want to do it?
Well, that was why when we talked originally about the concept is I thought it would be a good time to have. Remember that at the time there was negative equity, mm-hmm. had all these people that couldn't go anywhere. And so that was why I thought the concept was probably going to kick in again. And it just never did.
Not yet.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for joining us. I appreciate it. What's the phone number of your business, Ted?
951-247-2213.
Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.